Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Emmett County Board of Commissioner meeting, October 19th, 2023, 6 o'clock. Let's all stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, let's have the roll call.
Commissioner Lockbaum?
Here.
Commissioner Aarons?
Here.
Commissioner Mapes?
Here.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Here.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Here.
Commissioner White?
Here.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Here.
All present and accounted for. So, looking for an approval of the agenda, but we're going to add on the agenda that was given to us just before the meeting. CDBG Housing Improvement Liability Program. Chill. So everybody knows about that. So could we have an approval for a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll make the motion that we approve the agenda with the addition.
I'll second. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion passes. Going to looking for a motion to approve the minutes for the October 9th meeting.
So move. Support.
We have a motion and a second on the October 9th minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion passes. It is time for public comment. Anybody wishing to speak, you've got 3 minutes. Step up to the podium and come on up.
You all got a copy of what I'm going to read. Carla Buckmaster. Housing definitely is needed in Emmett County, but this Maple Block Flats project plan has some issues that should be addressed, no matter how small they may appear. I hope you commissioners have spent a great deal of time learning about this project. Although this evening I do understand you only are being asked to approve a public hearing date, I just am making some of my concerns known, and you likely will hear them again. Number one, Maple Block Flats LLC does not own the property and has no skin in the game. Two, as far as I know, no security-type bond or assurance or guarantee exists of what happens if the project is not completed, and we all know that that can happen, witnessing the hole in the heart of Petoskey. Three, how much will the rent be, for instance, for a two-bedroom apartment, even for A, the 25 units for no greater than 100% AMI households, and for B, the 102 units available for less than 120% AMI? In April, in 2023, Michigan Block Flats said, and this is in quotes, about 60 to 90 plus or minus units would be designated to 80% to 120% of the AMI. So I'm not sure of the number of workforce housing units. Does any written agreement exist toward any actual numbers for household workforce housing? So with those other numbers that I read in the quotations or in the parentheses, so money-associated decisions were made by City Council, for instance, with those previous numbers. Now those numbers have changed and carry forward for true or not. Four, figures I have determined from information for the project show that it will be about a $51 million project, with the public providing at least $19 million of that. Five, money that will be siphoned from the school system by brownfield plans legally must be returned for operating funds, but not returned for sinking fund money for the public schools. I have seen that sinking fund loss will be at least $1 million over the years of the brownfield plan. We public voters had okayed that sinking fund with a 1.43 millage. By agreement with this brownfield plan, the schools are allowing that voted millage to be taken, but now have the audacity the next coming election to be asking for more money to raise $18 million for the schools.
9 seconds, Carl.
Pardon?
9 seconds. I think you need that.
I have written in here. I will continue reading my additional comments in the public comment, at the last public comment, but you might last glance at them prior to that. Pretty good timing, huh?
Yes, it was. Perfect.
You must have practiced.
Rehearsal.
Thank you, Carla. Anybody else? Step up to the podium.
Hi, good evening. I'm Deneen Smith. I'm the Executive Director for Friendship Centers of Emmett County Council on Aging. Emmett County has adequate funding for senior services. The problem is that seniors are having to choose between food and medication, while decisions about millage dollars are being made between books and baths. Part of my role as the Executive Director for the Council on Aging is to advocate for Emmett County seniors and educate decision makers about the needs of seniors and those caring for an aging parent or older adult. 30% of Emmett County is over 60. There are limited public funds available for senior services, and the needs are great. I'm sure we agree that services funded through the millage are designed to meet the needs of older adults. Without a millage, there would be no senior services. As a nonprofit, we are constantly trying to raise money. It is an enormous, relentless, and unsustainable burden. The millage was implemented to alleviate this. After years of lobbying for a millage, it was put on the ballot, and it was approved solely for Friendship Centers in 1986. By 1990, other agencies wanted funds, and the commissioners obliged, resulting in a change in the ballot language and development of the Aging Committee, Advisory Committee on Aging. Most voters believe that we are still the sole beneficiary of funds. The process now resembles a competitive grant process. Senior-specific programs and services that are intended to meet basic senior needs are now compared against special projects that serve a fraction of Emmett County seniors. Decisions are made about providing books or baths. Looking at the stats, recognizing that people are living longer, and most seniors prefer to remain living in their own homes, we expect that increased services are required. We must anticipate unmet medical, financial, legal, personal care, transportation, and food needs of our aging population. The millage application has been in place for 33 years. The committee is comprised of citizens who are doing their best with very little guidance and no oversight. They are not senior service experts and do not answer to the population they are intended to represent. It is time for Emmett County to create a strategy about senior services. The current approach allows special projects to be funded, resulting in limited needed services, wait lists, and underserved seniors. It's time to change the process. Seniors deserve to live safely in our community, eat at least one nutritious meal a day, have safe, reliable transportation, and baths. At a minimum, I'm asking the Board of Commissioners to limit the senior services millage application process to senior-specific nonprofits. As initially structured in 1986, a millage specifically for us as a Council on Aging is ideal. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? Seeing none, we're going to move on. We'll go to the tip of the mitt, appearance.
I don't see Anna here tonight, so I think we'll push that to the next meeting. She was scheduled to present tonight. You do have the information in the packet. So I guess I would move on to number two.
Okay. So is this, go ahead.
Raven's here for number two.
Okay.
My name is Raven Schneider. I'm the Director of Equalization for Emmett County. And the apportionment report that you have is a report that's an analysis and listing of all the millage rates in Emmett County for 23. So does anyone have questions on it?
Pardon me?
Do you have any questions about it?
Any questions on the board yet?
Just had a chance to look at it. Haven't had a chance to look at it yet, sorry.
It's in the packet.
It's in the packet.
I missed it.
Oh, yeah. And then you have the hard copy. I just handed out.
So I just make one correction on the motion. It says revised 2022 in it. This is actually the board to approve the 2023 program.
I was wondering about that.
Okay. So we just need to take out revised 2022 and just add 2023.
Okay. Any? Thank you.
Yep.
So we're looking for the motion.
Chair, I move the board approve the revised 2023 apportionment report as presented by the Equalization Director.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? I guess we already did discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion passes. We have no unfinished business, no.
Anna?
No.
No.
So we're looking for a motion for the claims and committee and travel motion.
Chair, I move for the payment of claims in the amount of $12,999,194.91 for the payment of the committee and travel vouchers in the name of $3,732.86.
Should we do the administrator's report first?
We'll do this one first.
I'll support.
We have a motion and a support. Any discussion? Let's have the roll call vote.
Commissioner Loughbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Koontz?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Cut that out.
Motion passes. Let's back up to the administrator's report.
Good evening. Thank you. In the report tonight, you will see that we have our staffing report, and I think some good news on that. We're just down, and we always leave the deputy and the sheriff's position open because that's a kind of a revolving with retirements, so that's open, and then EMS coordinators, those are positions that we currently have open. So overall, we're in pretty good shape for this year, but every month I come here, this report changes. Airport, we did start taking the larger airplanes a couple weeks ago. To date, we have not had any issues, and it's been running smoothly at the airport. We have our airport board meeting next month, so there'll be more updates on that. I won't go through the planning and zoning because I know you folks will be doing that tonight. But I did want to include some of the projects that we have going on in, throughout the county right now. We talked to you and brought this a few months back about the McAuliflin Shoreline parking lot expansion. I'm happy to report that that project is now complete. These pictures were taken last week. The gravel's in, the bumper blocks are in, and it's really added a nice addition to that. And we added probably about 20 more parking spots. Sheriff Road Patrol, we're working on the HVAC project there that you approved a couple of meetings ago. That is going very well. There's some photos in there of the replacement equipment in that facility. And you'll also see at Bay Bluffs the projects going on there where they're redoing the entire boiler room. That project will take quite some time, but you can see some of the new boilers in there and one of the mixers. And that is my report for tonight.
Thank you. Sorry about skipping you.
Sorry.
And next we have Pam. Again, I see her in Sheboygan. I see her in Petoskey.
I know, we're everywhere. All right, so what I'm presenting tonight is through August. And Tatum, if you'll just go to the graph. So the first few pages just kind of show you what the differences are, and I'm just going to kind of point out a few things here. So under general government, the difference there is the revenue sharing that we have, the revenue sharing reserve fund. So there's two types of revenue sharing, one that comes directly from the state and one that comes from our own money. This is our last year of the revenue reserve fund. We will start getting it now from the state of Michigan. So that's where you see kind of the difference under that general government. This year, that revenue sharing is around $521,000, and that will close our account out. And then next year, we'll get the other revenue sharing. And then under public safety...
Could I stop you for a minute?
Yes.
We're the last county?
We are the last county.
So,
and this is the last of that money, and that'll close that fund out.
So Pam really deserves a gold star for that.
Now, that was before me.
Well, okay.
So I just got to, you know, keep taking the money as they told us we could use it. So
thank you.
Yeah, I get a half a star.
Half a star.
Under public safety, a lot of the changes there, you've got your building permits, which are up, and then jail fees are up from last year. And then one of the biggest areas where you're going to see a big change is the airport, but included in this $4 million is $1.1 million from the CARES money. Those dollars at the end of this year will be put in a signed fund balance for capital needs at the airport. So that's where that big difference is there. And then the other area where we're down a little bit is community and economic development, and that has to do with registered deeds with their transfer tax and the recording fees. So we just don't have as much of that going on. And then if you go to the next graph, there's really not a whole lot here to talk about. You'll see that public safety is up. A lot of that has to do with we're fully funded or fully staffed, and we haven't been in the last couple of years. And then they did receive a bump in their wages this year to help bring them up so that we're competitive. Then under the airport, you're going to see that we're down a little bit in expenses. A lot of that has to do with the price of fuel. The fuel price has actually come down, but we're still selling about the same gallons. That's why you'll see a little bit increase in the revenue. Other than that, we are right on target with our budget. We are in the process of next week. I'll be working with Dave and Mike to go over the 24 budget, and then hopefully we'll be setting up meetings, try to get them in that first week of November so that we don't mess with your deer hunt. So that's all I have to report. Does anybody have any questions?
Thank you, Pam. Any questions for Pam? I guess not. Good job.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we're moving on to new business, and we've already done the first one, so we'll go to the Brownfield Redevelopment Authority.
No, how about the claims?
County Amendment Money Purchase Plan?
Yep. Yeah, I skipped the first one. Sorry about that. I skipped two of them. Okay, County Amendment Money and Purchase Plan.
If you recall, back in April, we brought to you for approval an overview of the county's retirement plan. We hired a firm to help come in and review our 457 plan and our 401A plan, which have not been reviewed in...
It's restated in 2016.
What we have set up here is a review of that, and out of the review... one of the things that they came up with is that to establish a retirement board, which consists of employees and also consists of one member from the board. That would have oversight. It does not have the ability to change the amount of the money that's being submitted by the county, or it is employees' contributions and looking at their program and the monies that are invested in both the 401k program to make sure that we're providing the best opportunities for employees to invest their money is the real key. I don't know, Denise, if you'd like to say anything else about it?
Sure, and Aaron Castle, who is from VMT, the council that we've retained, is here via Zoom to answer any questions that I can't answer. He's the expert. But the purpose of the retirement board is to provide financial due diligence to look from a compliance perspective, and also to make sure that we're making the right decisions with respect to the financial health of the plan.
Okay.
And so what we're asking for tonight is to establish that board. And once we establish that board, then you would have to assign one of the members from this commission to that board. If you look in the packet, you will see the board and what consists of the board. We have union members. We have four of our unions. We have one general employee, one commissioner, appointment from HR, and appointment from administration. The board would be nine members.
Nine members, right.
So what you're saying is what, there's been a lack of oversight or something regarding a retirement program? As far as investments and that kind of thing over the years?
There's been no real oversight in monitoring the program. The program has functioned, but we want to go back in there and look at it, and that's the recommendation from the overview that we did. This is one of the recommendations that they had. We should have a board that oversees it. Ultimately, this board is what oversees it, but it's important that we have folks that are looking at this on a monthly or an annual basis.
And the next step in the process then will be to engage with an investment consultant who will work with the retirement board and help them make sure they're educated and help them and give them guidance to the recommendations they ultimately will bring to the board.
So this is common practice and we're just not doing it?
Correct.
Thank you.
We're a little bit behind.
Understood.
If I could, this is Aaron Kiesel. I would not say that you're a little bit behind. It's not uncommon for me to come into situations much like this. I think you're a little bit ahead of the game, actually, considering what you're considering tonight. Hopefully setting up a retirement board that is solely responsible for fulfilling the fiduciary duties with respect to the county retirement plans. I know you as a county board of commissioners have a lot of different responsibilities, so establishing this board that, has only one responsibility not only makes your lives a little bit easier, but fulfills those fiduciary and legal responsibilities and makes everybody's life a little bit easier.
Thank you. Any other discussion on this? I guess we need the motion first, don't we? Who would like to read the motion?
Mr. Chair, I move to approve Amendment 5 to the Emmett County Money Purchase Pension Plan and Trust and authorize the county administrator to sign the same.
Awesome. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussions or questions? Let's call a roll call.
Commissioner Aarons?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner Lofbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
And the motion passes. So do we appoint somebody now, or do we?
We'll bring that back once we get it all established. Then we'll come back and ask for a member from this.
Okay. Commission. So now we'll go to, if you guys would like to, go to Brownfield.
Sounds good.
Tammy, I don't know if you're going to start this one off, Mac. Are you going to start either one? But before us tonight, you're going to get a little overview of the Maple Block Project, an induction to the Brownfield Plan, and really the ultimate goal of this is to set a public hearing for our next meeting.
Mac, you want to come up?
Sure.
Good evening. My name is Mac McClelland. I'm a Brownfield consultant. Last time I was with you, I was representing the Brownfield Authority. But tonight, I want to be clear, I'm representing Maple Block Flats, to be clear on that. Dave said I had a couple hours to make a presentation here, so I appreciate the time. No, I didn't. So, and also, I forgot that I didn't control the remote on this, and so we're going to kind of do a little bit of quick thing here. So, but we'll try and blast through this as quickly as possible. Happy to answer any questions as well. So,
and just a reminder that this presentation will also be given at the public hearing if there's any additional information.
Yes, and any other information that you want. We want to provide an introduction for you tonight, ask any questions, and then address those questions. Right now, Great Lakes Capital and Maple Block Flats. Also, I have Jeff Smoke, who is the managing partner at Great Lakes Capital, on the phone, and so he can respond to any questions for the project as well. But so Great Lakes Capital owns the, or it has a purchase agreement, has a purchase agreement for the former Michigan Maple Block property, and the proposal is to develop 204 units. 102 of those would be at 120% AMI for households of 120% AMI, and 25 of those households would be at 100% AMI. There is a process that we'll have to go through for that, and documentation. There's also part of a, we'll talk about that, a missing middle grant that has to provide all the documentation and assurances for all of those rent-controlled activities as well. And I've said this throughout all the conversations that we've had. This checks all the boxes for brownfields. It has an old industrial facility with lots of asbestos abatement. It has unstable soils that require special foundations, and it has widespread contamination on the site. So it's a classic example of a brownfield site there. So, and really, the cost to construct and develop that site, along with these extraordinary costs, all of these costs all put together, there really isn't enough revenues to be able to meet that 120% AMI. That's the gap that is being talked about. There's ways to deal with that gap, and that's really the incentive package that's coming before you tonight and has been gone through throughout the process. So there's an opportunity to provide some future funding for the Greenway extension included in that. The rail pathway goes along there, and so this infrastructure is an eligible activity, so opportunity to extend that important public asset as well. So, and really how this works, and I'll talk about this, but the increased taxes generated by the development, $50 million worth of investment is going to raise those taxes substantially. For a period of time, those taxes are captured to reimburse those extraordinary costs to help develop the project. The benefits, you know, are reaped later on. It's almost an investment in the project as well. Also, by providing housing, certainly a public benefit, but those taxes will continue well on beyond that time period. So I think you all know the location on Standish Avenue. It's about one parcel, about an 11-acre site or so, and provides some pretty significant opportunity in terms of its location and in terms of its opportunity for a great housing project. So as you know, it's a former 100-year-old industrial building, been around for a long time, and was closed a few years ago. There is significant asbestos on the property as well, and there's widespread contamination. You can't really see too well, but the bold spots are those areas where there is soil contamination above criteria. And so that's a little bit of the problem with it. It's not an isolated tank release where there was something we can dig up and take out. It's widespread across the site and it creates a challenge. There's also some groundwater contamination on the site, but one good part about it is we have seven wells that have gone along the riverside, along the bank, and tested groundwater in that area. There's only one of those wells which has any impact in it. And so it appears that contamination is not flowing into the Bear River based on those. We're going to do some additional investigation along the river to ensure that as well. But at least at this point in time, it appears that the contamination is relatively contained within the soils. And again, it's all unstable soils. There's a clay lens underneath it, which require special foundations, pier stone piers that are going to have to be installed in each of the buildings. So an additional cost for that site.
Can I ask what type of contamination is in the soil?
Yeah, it's there are volatile organic compounds. There aren't any chlorinated biphenyls, the real kind of scary stuff. No PFAS. We have tested for that. And in metals throughout the site. A lot of historic fill across the site as well that contains metals. So. Just a couple of photos. I'm sure you are all familiar with it, but it's a classic industrial building. And so what the project is to take that closed, vacant industrial building and to transform it into a pretty amazing apartment complex that will provide some pretty great housing for the community. So that's okay. you're speeding me up here, right?
No,
so, no, that's okay. Great Lakes Capital is a private equity development firm. It's a large firm, has a number of projects throughout the area, two projects in Traverse City that are currently going on. Funded in South Bend, Indiana, and Jeff can address any of the questions you have about the company. Maple Block Flats will be the sole purpose LLC that develops the project as well. So, they have extensive experience with 50 projects over nine states, a very robust development company as well. They're also teamed with J.B. Donaldson, a 100-year-old construction company that's doing a lot of construction management work on there, doing similar projects again in Traverse City. As well, and so they have a good, strong working relationship and a great team. As you may have seen, there are seven residential buildings with a future commercial building up in the northeast portion along Standish Avenue there. Again, 204 total units. 102 of those units will be targeted towards that 120 AMI households, and 25 of those will be targeted for 100% AMI households. with a total investment of over $50 million. Some renderings of that. I think the color scheme is a little bit different, more like the picture at the bottom, but gives you an idea about what that is. We have gone all through the city planning process and received PUD approval and site plan approval as well for the project. So the project incentives, because of all of these challenges, really, to go from the former Michigan Maple Block to Maple Block Flats really requires significant incentives to be viable. And so we've pretty much tried to turn over every rock that we've had. There are significant state incentives that I'll describe in a minute that really are funding 67% of all that funding. We've got four or five state grants and loans that's providing a great portion of the deal. There are two local and state incentives. There's a tax abatement, which is included, which will have an impact on local taxes, and the brownfield TIF that we're discussing tonight. So that's the local component to the contribution. Again, both of those are matched 46% by the state as well. So and just a total share of incentives, all those incentives that are packaged for the project is a little less than 8.5% for the county and about 16%, a little under 17% for the city. So we're leveraging a whole lot of state dollars for this project with the match and the contributions. So this is just a quick listing of the grants that are available. There's a letter of intent for a $5 million missing middle grant as well. We received a brownfield grant. There's also a $1 million loan, but that's going to come out of the TIF, so I didn't want to double count that. We got that through the city of Petoskey and Eagle. There's a blight elimination grant with the Emmett County Land Bank Authority to be able to take down the building and abate the asbestos on there. And the residential housing exemption is the tax abatement, and brownfield TIF are the values there. So that's kind of where those numbers come up of the 67%. So in terms of the project financing sources, the developer, this is a little bit unusual in my experience, is putting in 25% of their own money, a large equity share into the project, private financing of about $24 million. The public grants and public loans and other sources represent that. But so approximately 75% of the funding for the project is through either equity or private financing. Just a quick note about this, about brownfield TIF financing. I think you're all familiar with it, but it really is those increased taxes on eligible property. You have to be eligible property for eligible activities can be reimbursed over time. This just is the current taxes that are generated by the project, and we'll stay in that point. Once the investment is made, investments, that's the difference between local and state taxes, the two colors there, for a period of time that will grow. And then after 12 years, the residential housing abatement ends. That will uncap that, and so full taxes would be available. And the city did limit the capture to 22 years. The actual calculations that I did for it was that it will be paid off and would have to be paid off in the full 30 years that's allowed for. The city did put a limit in the brownfield plan for that. So there's about $8 million of expenses. You know, again, that's a budget expense that will be unreimbursed as a result. So some additional work had to be done to try and close that gap as well. And after that period of time, when that brownfield capture ends, then those dollars go back to the taxing jurisdictions from that point and forever, as long as the site is operational. Eligible property, and you can kind of click through these quickly, is this hits all the items. It can be any one of these pieces, a contaminated site, blighted, functionally obsolete, historically designated, or housing property is a new addition to the Act 381 provides that. So this project meets all five of those eligible activities, and it has to be within an approved brownfield plan, which we're considering as part of this process. So eligible activities are in three primary areas: environmental eligible activities. I didn't list them out, but anything environmental in the soil, anything to deal with the contamination, investigating it, digging it out, dealing with vapor mitigation, any of those issues. For every community in the state, lead and asbestos abatement and demolition is available. For core communities, like the city of Petoskey, site preparation and infrastructure is also available for that. And then the new housing development activities, this was passed in July, to encourage projects. It's focused only on those 120% AMI projects as well. It also includes all those non-environmental eligible activities, so site preparation and infrastructure, lead and asbestos abatement and demolition. And then importantly, it also deals with the financing gap, the cost between the development costs and the rent gap that's provided. So that's included in this brownfield plan as well. There's some other costs of brownfield plan development and implementation and authority, the Emmett County Brownfield Authority administration and operating costs as well. So there's three kind of primary documents. One is the brownfield plan that has gone through a process, is now with the county board. And if it is a county brownfield authority, the local unit of government, City of Petoskey in this case, has to concur with the plan, which they've done. The next thing is Act 381 work plan, which is kind of a more detailed document that has to go in for state tax capture approval. We have to ask for that explicitly, and they evaluate that. Eagle for environmental, MEDC for non-environmental, and MISHTA for housing. Then there is a reimbursement agreement, which codifies all of these arrangements as well. Will include any of the stipulations that are necessary, any of the guarantees, the indemnity for the public entities as well. It primarily says, if you do the stuff you said you were going to do and you document those expenses and we capture taxes, we'll pay you back. It takes 17 pages to do that, but that's the basic element of that. So there is little risk to the, if the project does not move forward, all of that risk is on the developer. If you don't generate any taxes, you can't be reimbursed for those taxes. So just a process, the City Council did concur with the plan on October 2nd. The Brownfield Authority reviewed and approved the plan on October 10th. We're presenting here tonight and hopefully setting a public hearing for your November 6th meeting, and then we'll work through the Act 381 work plan process with Eagle, MEDC, Michigan Strategic Fund, and MEDC in Michigan. So our request tonight is to approve the resolution to set the public hearing. Hopefully that provided enough, but not too much.
Quick question, Matt.
Yeah,
so
Matt.
The housing that's at 100, set at 120% of area median income, I'm assuming the rent then for those, the formula would be somewhere around 25-30% of that income? Or that?
Yeah, typically I think the MISHTA guidelines say 30%. There's a little bit, I think, of flexibility because of utilities and 30-35% within that range. But yes, that's the general format. And again, with the missing middle program, there's a whole lot of documentation and activity has to go, and that's mirrored with that brownfield TIF as well.
And the work plan, which is in December, that'll be approved by this board as well?
By the Brownfield Authority.
Yep.
It's pretty much the same as the brownfield plan, except with a little bit more detail.
Thank you. Yep.
And it has to be consistent.
Any other questions?
I have one. This Maple Block Flats, would they be exempt from property taxes for 22 years?
They would receive, they're still paying their taxes the same way that they do. They'd write the check, and it's based on the assessed value times the millage rate, they'd pay their taxes. In this particular case, for this 22-year period, they would receive a portion of those taxes back to cover the extraordinary cost that they invested on the site. So the environmental, the abatement, the demolition, and site preparation infrastructure.
Yeah, the taxes just go somewhere else. People pay them, but they go different places.
So the taxes have to be made up by other parcels in the city or the township?
Not made up.
Yeah, there really is a minimal amount of taxes being generated by this, and that's sort of the concept and idea is that these are taxes which would not be generated unless we have these sort of incentives to be able to do the project. Otherwise, it would stay in its state.
So what's the percentage of the taxes being returned to the developer for the 22-year period?
About 84%, I think.
So that's what, 15% of new tax revenue that would be generated otherwise, correct?
We're capturing all of the taxes that will be generated, but about half of that will go towards the Greenway and to the Brownfield Authority. Yeah. Actually, what's happening is all of those taxes are captured.
They're captured, yes.
Yes, they're captured. A portion of those will go to the developer. A portion of those will go to the Greenway improvement, and a portion will go back to the authority for managing the project and doing those activities. So there will not be any return to the local units of government during that time period.
No return.
Correct.
So the amount of taxes that are being paid now, that's not captured.
Yes, that's correct.
That's important.
Those are not captured. Whatever's being paid for the project now will continue to be paid to all the local...
If the project doesn't happen...
Local taxing jurisdiction.
The amount of taxes that are paid if the project doesn't happen is the same as if the project happened.
That's correct, yes.
And then whatever they generate in new tax assessment or whatever, that's what gets captured.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I kind of liken this to growing the pie. You know, in a lot of programs, you only have a fixed pie and you carve it out, and then when you're done, that's done. But this really generates its own form of pie for incentives, and we're able to get the state, in this case, to pay quite a bit, usually about 46%. So it's kind of a long-term state grant to support a local economic redevelopment project.
So right now we get X amount of taxes. If we do nothing, we continue to get the same X amount of taxes. If we do something, the taxes will increase. Most of them will be captured for 22 years. In the meantime, we'll have housing, and at the end of 22 years, the taxes will all be assessed.
All those taxes go back to the local jurisdictions in the state.
And if we didn't do it, we'd still be getting the same.
Still be getting that same.
Yeah.
Kind of that first graph with the little line on
there. And in the meantime, we're drawing new people to the county to shop and spend money and collect tax revenue that way.
That certainly is the benefit. Yep. All the spinoff activities and redevelopment. Likely, I think, you know, that's part of the master plan is to kind of convert this area from, you know, industrial more towards housing, kind of provides that stimulus. I've seen that in a number of communities when there's a project like that, then it creates all the spin-off redevelopment opportunities.
We don't have that. We'll just have a blighted building sitting there in perpetuity.
And it also cleans up the site. One of the key things, it gets those contaminants out of the ground.
Tammy.
Yes, Tammy. Could I just make a couple of
comments? Oh,
yeah, sure. Just in response to Chuck's question and a little bit beyond that, only those expenses that are turned in, only the expenses that are eligible will be reimbursed. So it's going to be based on actual costs, not on the estimated costs. These costs in this document are all estimates. So we will go through a process where if this is approved, then we have to obtain copies of all the invoices that were paid by the developer, and only those are paid back. So it's not money that's just going to be handed to the developer based on their estimated cost. And second is that comment about the contamination. If nothing is done here, the current property owner is not obligated to clean up the site. It's only if there's redevelopment that occurs. So this money would be partly used in the remediation of the environmental impact that business has had that could continue to happen if nothing is changed.
Yeah. Really, really important point. Thanks. And I just want to say this is almost like a budget, your annual budget document. So this is the budget that's there, but it's based on actual expenditure. So like claims and accounts would come to measure that against that budget. So thank you. I just wanted, if Jeff had a comment or whatever that could have the opportunity, and Dave told me to hold up the phone last time. So Jeff, do you have a comment? Are you still there? Hold on a second, Jeff. Sorry.
Next time, we'll
let
them come through Zoom.
Okay. Matt, great presentation, and appreciate everyone's time tonight, and happy to answer any questions that may be of topic.
Thank you, Jeff. Any other questions? Any other discussion? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So, could we have the motion?
Chair, I move that the board set a public hearing for the Maple Block Flats Brownfield Plan and direct the county clerk to notify the public pursuant to the Open Meetings Act and work with the Planning and Zoning Director to notify the taxing jurisdictions pursuant to the Brownfield Redevelopment Financing Act that the public hearing will take place on November 6, 2023 at 6 p.m. in the Board of Commissioners Room, 200 Division Street, Petoskey, Michigan.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Let's call the roll.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Lofbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Motion passes. Up next, we have something about the elections.
Yeah, I think you get me on this one, right? Unless Dave wants to do it. Okay, so in November of last year, statewide voters approved Proposal 2, which requires all jurisdictions in the state of Michigan to hold 9 days of early in-person voting in all state and federal elections. In Emmett County, what we have decided to do is the 18 local jurisdictions will be contracting with the county to provide these services. The county clerk, which is me, has entered into an agreement with the local jurisdictions to provide these services for all of Emmett County. The agreement has been attached to your packet, so you can review that. Consolidating into one early voting location is cost-effective and efficient for our municipalities and for our county. The County Election Commission, which is comprised of myself, the probate judge, and the treasurer, has approved the VFW Post 2051 as the early voting location. So that's where all voters will go to vote if they want to vote early. This location is centrally located and is being provided at a reasonable rental rate to the county at $200 per day. In 2024, there will be a total of 27 days of early voting, which is covering the three state and federal elections that will be held in 2024. The site contract has been attached for your approval tonight. And then just so you know, also, the cost of providing these services is reflected in the 2024 election budget, which you will be reviewing with Pam and Dave first week of November. So you will see those costs reflected there. Also reflected in that budget is an estimation of the fees that will be reimbursed by the state. The state budget has appropriated $30 million to implement early voting statewide. So before you is the site contract tonight.
Do you want to tell them how that's going to be staffed?
Sure. It's going to be staffed by our election workers that staff our precincts on election day. I'm working with the locals to schedule all of those workers. We'll probably have about 200 workers covering all of that. It'll be eight people per day. We're required to be open for 8 hours a day. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to do 8:30 to 4:30. And it starts the Saturday, so it's 2 weekends before the election, Saturday to Sunday, and then not that Monday right before the election. And then the local clerks will also be the site supervisors for each of those days. I'm happy to answer any questions.
So if this doesn't happen, then each one of those 18 locations have to do this themselves. This doesn't affect absentee ballots or anything like that, so.
Yeah, those are all still available to the voters. Yeah, if we don't do this, then basically you have to times these costs by 18 because every jurisdiction would have to do it on their own.
So. Chairman, when I attended some of the my township meetings early this year, they were really alarmed at this 9 days of voting. They didn't know how they were going to be able to afford to do it. So I think this is going to be a big help. The only thing that bothers me is it's so far for the residents from, say, Mackinac City. It's like a 40-mile trip one way. But financially, I think it's going to be better.
Well, one good thing is you could have chosen 29 days of early voting.
If you want that to. And we will not be doing this for our local elections. Counties have the option if they want to provide it for local elections, and we've decided not to do that. Well, it's not required until 2024, so we wouldn't have had to do it this November anyway.
Changes are in effect.
Correct.
So the actual voting day, the precincts all over the counties will be open?
Yes, all the precincts will still be open on election day.
So they don't have to drive from Mackinac?
Yeah, so they still have that option.
They can still vote the day off. Plus they can do
absentee. Plus they have absentee, yeah. Yeah. They have lots of options. Sure.
Okay, any other questions? Let's have the motion.
I move that the board approve the rental agreement with VFW Post 2051 in the amount of $600, $5,600, which includes a $200 refundable security deposit, and authorize the administrator to sign the same.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Let's have the roll call.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner
Lofbaum? Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
The motion passes. Up next, the Committee on Aging.
I will let Pam talk about this, and Mr. Mapes also.
All right, so the Committee on Aging met on September 13th, and they went through to take a look at how much money we had to allocate. The amount of requests that came in came to $1,965,221. We only had $1,886,719 to allocate. So when the committee met on this, what they decided to do was take a 4% reduction on each entity and to bring that down to that $1,886,719. Friendship Center is, they had requested $1,790,611. They're going to get $1,718,987. Bay Bluffs requested $37,200. And they are going to get $35,712. Wawatam, $70,760. And they're going to get $67,930. Harbor Springs Friendship Center, $49,000. They're going to get $47,040. And Petoskey Library asked for $15,000. They're going to get $14,400. So the committee came up with that percentage, and they all agreed that that was the best way to handle this. And if you take a look at the 23 allocation, each entity is getting an increase in their 24 budget.
I agree with that, very well put. The meeting went really well. Everybody was happy after the meeting was over with. And everybody had input, a lot of input from the rest of the committee. Everybody was doing their math quickly, trying to come up with the numbers that we thought would be fair. And everybody was so close to 4%, it just, you know, that was really a no-brainer. You know, to allow everybody that requested money to get it less than, you know, with a 4% reduction of what they asked for. And that gave us a little bit of money left over to adjust if we need to. So I recommend that we... Well, yes.
Okay. Could we have the motion?
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the attached contracts with the county's agencies who apply to receive funds from the senior millage, approve distribution of the senior millage funds as stated by the Board of Commissioners, and authorize the county administrator to sign all the attached contracts on behalf of the board.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussions? Any questions? Let's have the roll call.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Lofbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Motion passes. Then we come to the chill.
Yes, thank you. MISTA has a program out there, a competitive grant program, where it's providing funding through HUD to, we have a program currently where we spend about $45,000 a year for improvements throughout the county. This grant came out, there's $500,000, or we applied for $500,000, and the guidelines have developed very rapidly. There's, I think, a calendar in there of when we were noticed that we could apply for the grant. We did that, then we got the second letter saying, okay, you applied for the grant, here's the requirements for that, and one of them is to set a public hearing, and you need to have that done before you can apply for the grant, which is due November 13th. So we do not, as our practice, not to bring things to you like this, but this is a very quick deadline. It's a $500,000 grant that would go back into Emmett County to help out with seniors' housing needs. We think it's a good move. Again, this is just to set a public hearing. We'll have a little bit more details at the public hearing. And this would allow us to submit the application for the grant.
Thank you.
But to do that, we have to hold a public hearing. So tonight we're asking to establish that public hearing.
So could we have somebody read the motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the board set a public hearing for the CDBG Housing Improving Local Livability Chill Program grant to be set on November 6th, 2023. 2023 at 6 p.m. in the Board of Commissioners room here at 200 Division Street, Petoskey, Michigan.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Let's have the roll call.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Koontz?
Yes.
Commissioner Loftbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Motion passes. Okay, we're coming down to, I guess up next is committee reports. We usually start on this side.
Yeah, like I'll start over here, sure. So the Community Corrections Advisory Board met on October 12th. We heard a presentation from Caitlin Kuski, Executive Director of the Community Recovery Alliance, regarding support that the CRA offers for individuals leaving jail or recovery. We approved the fiscal year 2023 fourth quarter report and the request for the fiscal year 2024 grant award. The Emmett County Historical Commission met on October 11th. We met our first time new member, Denise Evans, who brought a renewed level of enthusiasm to the table. A lively discussion ensued covering fresh ideas and potential projects. And there are still three openings on the Historical Commission from terms that have expired and people that have not reapplied. The Brownfield Redevelopment Authority met on October 10th. There was a special appearance by Julie Lowe from the Eagle Brownfield Coordinator. Eagle, Mac already mentioned this, Eagle recently awarded the City of Petoskey a $1 million grant and $1 million loan. The grant and loan are to cover due care activities for the Maple Block Flats project, mainly contaminated soil removal, additional environmental assessments, specialized foundations, and further evaluation of vapor intrusion issues. At a future meeting, the ECBRA would like to review potential brownfield sites and programs that may be available through Eagle. Several details were addressed regarding the brownfield plan for the Michigan Maple Block project by consultants Mac McClellan and Susan Wenzlick, county staff and BRA members. Mac McClellan reported that the Michigan Maple Block project was rated high in Eagle priority, and the plan was ultimately approved by the Brownfield Redevelopment Authority. And those are my report for those meetings.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Road Commission had two meetings, one on September 29th and the other on October 13th. At the meeting of the 29th, a review of a very successful summer apprentice program was presented. It's the goal of the Road Commission to continue this program in 2024 if MDOT makes it available, since it is for MDOT. The Road Commission approved at the October 13th meeting, the Road Commission approved Will O'Brien bids and then went into closed session to discuss the Teamster contract that would be in effect from January 1st, 2024 to December 31, 2026. Regarding the Brownfield Authority, I think Matt and Mac and Tammy have covered that. North Country Community Mental Health, the board met on September 28th with two major items approved. The 2024 budget was presented for approval after review by both the Finance Committee and the full board. The budget was approved. Second, a one-time incentive payment of $2,000 was approved for all full-time and provider network employees. The breakdown is 68% of the employees are direct care workers and 32% are hourly North Country staff. Incentive works out to 96 cents per hour and is coming from funds that, if not used, would have to be returned back to the state of Michigan. For information, the Emmett County share of the PA2 liquor tax at the end of August is $756,433, but I understand some of that is being allocated or has a grant in for a possible drug court here in Emmett County. On October 5th, the Area on Aging of Northwest Michigan Board met and approved an FY24 budget. With much uncertainty regarding funding from both the state and federal sources have not been finalized. The board also approved for the 10-county service area $1.2 million in funding for Meals on Wheels, a vital program for all of our community counties. Fair Board, Agnes has provided the commissioners a report on the great 2023 fair. Fair Board met on October 12th, and we're already planning for the 2024 fair. Parks and Recreation. Headlands had another busy year with both visitors and rentals of the event center and houses on the property. An inspection was done on the green roof at the event center by a company that specializes in green roofs. The report will be provided to Parks Board in the November meeting. Camp Edisica had a very busy September with campers. Two more turf tee pads for disc golf were installed, and a sewer pump had to be replaced. Work was also done in the Northwestern State Trail bridges, replacing 30 plus boards that had rotten during its time. And that is my report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dave. Ryan?
Hey, Dave covered the Parks and Rec meeting quite well. I wasn't able to attend that. I was at the MAC conference. I'll get to that in a little bit. DPW, just adding on to what Dave has said, recycled materials are still way below 2022 prices, including everything, cost of newspaper, cardboard, plastic, metal, and glass. Prices are starting to recover a little bit towards the end of this year. We expect it to go up a little bit by next year. Total garbage volume for the year is down, which is a good thing because we're recycling more. However, revenues are up from last year because of an increased fee structure. And as far as the Part 115 Materials Management Plan, the state is still delaying the output of that report. Attended the TAC meeting on October 12th as well, and the TAC board voted to approve the new CAD system to a company called Hexagon as the vendor. The vote was 4-3. It was a very close vote. The no votes were because of the initial costs of the system. The current vendor, Central Square, indicated their system had to be upgraded to a new platform within a couple of years, so I think Hexagon was a good choice. And I could not attend the CC meeting yesterday, but I'm anxious to hear what Rich has to say. Fairgrounds, just to add on to what Dave had said, we did hear from Agnes about the fair synopsis. The attendance for the week was more than 16,000 people, despite not having great weather. I mean, it was okay, but it wasn't great. We did have attendees from 18 different states and 3 Canadian provinces. And we did hear from Pam that the revenues versus expenditures exceeded $66,000, making it a very successful year. The new electronic ticket system worked very well. And as David mentioned, we're planning for the 22-24 fair. And I was not able to attend the airport meeting on the 26th, so we'll get the rest of it from Chuck. And the MAC conference, attended that along with Neil from October 1 through the 3rd. Listened to members of the County Road Association regarding the Michigan Transportation Fund and Act 51 requirements on road funding and expenditure restrictions. Funding for Michigan's road system is falling short and will continue to, especially with the electric vehicle push. I did listen to a MDNR presentation on the future of hunting and fishing in the state. Hunting numbers increased during COVID, but are now continued. It's slowed down downturn in total numbers. More deer need to be taken to control the herd, so we've got to do our job. Attended the session on early voting and other Proposal 2 changes, and I mentioned earlier that we are doing the 9-day in advance early voting at the BFW Hall, but Susie and the rest of the board could have chosen it to 29 days early. Glad we're not doing that. Did hear of restrictions, though. Those early ballot boxes have to be kept separate from election day ballots. So it's a lot more complicated than that. All the clerks were really upset about the proposal, too. So that was my report.
Thank you.
Don, you want to go next?
Yeah. The health board. It was certainly was not a routine health board meeting. We were done and out of there in 40 minutes. But during that report, it was a short meeting. We approved the bills. There was no specific committee reports other than the bill paying committee. We had a report from Dan regarding the 5-year plan for building and grounds and a public comment during that meeting. Adding to the DPW meeting, which Brian did a great job for, but we did ask, the board did request, that the fund balance be included each month with financials. And it's something that when I was employed there, I was used to getting to see it, but I think it's something related to our new accounting system or something like that. Makes that difficult for Pam, but she's working on it. Working on finding a market for asphalt shingles, and also we're still looking to hire a non-CDL transfer station attendant. And we're also using alternative markets to get rid of our material where we were using Great Lakes tissue after it burned. We have to find other alternative markets for the material that we're sending over there, but that's working well. There was a DPW regional planning meeting today, just an introductory kind of a meeting that took place. There was a tour. It's 10 o'clock of the facility, those who want to attend the tour. I did not do that. I think I've seen enough of it. There were over 30 people attending the meeting, and there was a discussion about, you know, the plan. It's been approved. We're still waiting to see the hard copy of it, so we know what's expected, but it sounds like it's going to involve a lot of counties and municipals that don't normally get involved in that. But they are given an option, apparently, to opt out, but then the state will do it for you, and then you probably really won't like it. So, we were getting a lot of honorable mention regarding our facility that we have over in Harbor Springs, the DPW, and the job that we're doing. People just are using us as an example and a model. If they have the desire to build a facility, they want to be like ours. So that was a bonus. That was good. That was about a four-hour meeting today. Road Commission, Brian touched on that. The Bay Bluffs meeting was rescheduled, postponed this morning, rescheduled the next Thursday. That's all I have for my report.
I can make that next Thursday.
Can you?
Yeah. Keep it posted. Yeah.
Okay. October 16th, I attend the NACO Arts and Culture meeting by Zoom. I passed along a PowerPoint to everybody. There's a good discussion with the head of the Americans for Arts director on economic impact of arts and cultural activity as a tool for economic development in counties. It's very interesting. The amount of money is nationwide. It's just, I mean, it's very impressive. It surprised me. I'm an artist, and I was surprised by the numbers that were put up, by how much it really affects our community. There's some counties that actually have that disperse from their general funds monies for arts and culture in their counties. Ours doesn't, but we've got a very strong arts and cultural component to our counties by various nonprofits. We're very blessed that way. Not every county is the same, or state. I attended the Northwest Michigan Health Department Bill Pay Committee on the 16th by Zoom. That's where we look over all the bills to be paid, hence the name Bill Pay. That must be a really old term. Someone probably made up that name like 50 years ago, I imagine. I don't know. I learned a few new acronyms, which is, you know, in the health field, it has a lot of them. So, and we had a little short discussion with Commissioner LeVanway about a question from a previous Board of Health meeting I posed. As a bill for repairs was discussed, she was confused why the health department had to pay to replace some parts or something in a boiler system or something, and it was explained to her why and how it all worked by her staff. The Veterans Affairs Committee met October 18th, rescheduled from the October 3rd. We didn't have a quorum on October 3rd, so we had to reschedule a meeting at the Epler Road EMS conference room. I sent along the agenda and reports. Wherein that meeting, we approved the 2024 budget, passed and approved a new logo design for the department to be presented to the Board of Commissioners for review and approval, discussed the department van issues, pro and con, and we tabled that issue until we have more staff in the office to handle runs. We can't just buy a van and hope that we have enough people to drive people, you know, by volunteers. We can't count. You know, volunteers are amazing people, but the big but is they serve at their own convenience. You know, they're not employees. So you can count on some volunteers more than others, too, you know, and just the way it goes. So we need to, we want to be sure before we buy a van that we have all the ducks in a row of how the whole thing is going to run, and we have the people to do it. We just don't have the people to do it right now. We'll see what happens in the future. I attended the NACO Veterans Committee by Zoom on October 12th. We talked about Operation Greenlight, and that is a program nationwide on Veterans Day where we have green lights. People can put them on their own porches of their homes, but our county buildings are apparently going to be lit up. Right, Dave?
You will see it on all our flagpoles.
All our flagpoles will be lit up with a green light in support of the veterans. This is a nationwide event. What's nice is we got a whole template of how to do it. You know, one county started it and then made the template for people to copy it, and so it's spread across the nation. Kind of cool. You don't have to reinvent a wheel. The land bank on September 28th was canceled. There's no NLEA meeting this month, no Northern Michigan County Association, because it's a MAC conference month. Whenever we have a MAC conference, we don't meet that month. I attended the MAC conference, as Brian said, and with Brian, first through third. I attended two Road Commission-oriented info sessions on Act 51, the way Act 51 is a law that was passed in 1951, and it's been amended a million times, too, since then. But it's our road funding formulas, and so it's good for us to know how it all works. And he and I are both on the Transportation Committee of Michigan Association of Counties, so it's responsible to learn more about that. We elected board members of MAC. We had some plenary sessions, and the platforms of the MAC committees were presented and approved. And the various MAC committees present platforms, and we work on them each year, adjust them, add to them, subtract to them, reword them. And that's presented by MAC to our legislators to show what counties are in favor of and what they're not in favor of. So that's a communication tool to let the legislators know where we stand, and hopefully they don't pass down unfunded mandates or, you know, kind of hurt our finances at the county level in favor of the state level. So that's my report, Chair. I'm sorry, and Don covered the very quick health board meeting.
Thank you, Neil.
Okay, while Brian was goofing off someplace in the south in Kentucky, I think, I attended the Pelston Regional Airport Committee meeting Tuesday, September 26, 9:30 a.m. at the airport. There's a lot of talk about larger planes, which kind of makes me smile because we've gone to 30, 40 passenger planes to 60, 70, but I recall the 109 passenger planes were routine back in the 60s and the 70s. With North Central Airlines. The airport manager was very happy with fuel sales. He, and I quote him, the best in many years. Jet fuel sales was up 8%. General aviation fuel was up 5%. Passenger count was down, probably due to ticket prices. And there was one noise complaint concerning helicopters. And we decided to recommend a hangar renewal lease with Lehman Porter until July 1st of 2028. We have a five-year option for him to renew it. The next meeting is next Tuesday morning at 9:30 at the airport. On October 5th, here in this room at 7 o'clock, I attended the planning meeting. There was several items on the docket. The first one, 23-15 was Kevin Westcott. Special use permit was postponed. Item number 16, Ronald Dunkel for Dunkel Excavating, passed 8-0 for a special use permit. Number 17, Brian Green, special use permit was postponed to a future meeting. And number 18, special use permit for James Wessinger, passed 7-1. And we heard a lot of discussion about the zoning ordinance text amendments, and we will discuss that again in November. And we passed a rezone in the Atlanton area of 13 parcels in Littlefield Township, 8-0. And two nights ago, the Zoning Board of Appeals met here at 7 o'clock in this room. There was only one item on the docket. It was Marilyn Vertek and her husband, part-time summer residents, and they live in Friendship Township on Lambkin Road, and they had hired some contractors to build a small shed, a storage shed, and also a retaining wall. They did a nice job on it. I've seen pictures of it, but they placed it a little bit too close to the road, and there was only three members there at the meeting, myself. I was in favor of giving them permission to for that variance to be approved. The other two members kind of hinted they would be voting against it if we voted two nights ago, and they talked the applicant into waiting until the December meeting when all the members should be there, and so that was postponed. And the meeting adjourned at 6:55, and the next meeting is scheduled for November 21st. That's my report.
Thank you, Chuck. So I will start with the same meeting that I attended this morning at 10 o'clock, along with Pam, in some of the topics that we covered. So the SANE finances scored a 50% or a 50. I don't know if it was percent or just a score of a 50. And that's like another gold star that Pam gets because she's the keeper of the money there.
Out of what? 50 out of what?
Out of 50.
Out of 50. Okay.
So she got a top score. So, talked about a number of different things. They're looking for a van also, they had a program, but it's just not developing, so they might start looking in a different direction for a van. They have a van now, but it was a used van, but donated to them, and it needs a lot of Pam's money, and she doesn't like that, so for the maintenance on it and upkeep. So, we had three ODs in the area that they cover. Two of them were in Emmett County and one in Otsego County. And there's a new drug that they're mixing with some of the other drugs, and it's xylothin. It's a veterinarian drug. And I don't know how they're getting it. They don't know how they're getting it, but evidently Narcan has no effect on it. So if the officer that has the Narcan, or anybody that has the Narcan and it doesn't work, that's because of this situation here. So anyway, they're doing a great job, and I really appreciate what they're doing. And I appreciate Pam for what she's doing there. Let's see, I had the TAC meeting, but Ryan did a good job with that. Had a 911 meeting yesterday, and Dave was there, and there was a lot of discussion on the hexagon in Central Square and the finances of all of that, and so they've thrown it back at the three county commissioners and the three administrators to arm wrestle over what we can do for the budget that's coming up for the 911, and see if we can afford it or not, and so it's back on the table. It didn't get voted on. And that's my update. So up next, we have I guess we're coming down to public comment again. Anybody wishing to speak?
It's up to the board. We can. It's a presentation, the tip of the mitt.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it. You're here.
Okay. I apologize. I looked at the planning commission schedule and came at 7. Okay. So I apologize for keeping you later than you probably thought you were going to get out of here. My name is Anna McGlash, and I'm from the Tip of the Mitt Watershed Council. I work on local policy there. We're your neighbors across the park. Are you guys familiar with what we do, our mission? Seeing nods. All right. Then I'm going to skip straight to back to agenda, actually. So pretty much what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about the impact of development on stormwater and then talk about policy management options to mitigate those impacts and then backtrack into techniques and implementation. And then we'll skip this slide and into stormwater. So before we really get into this, I'm going to talk about what a watershed is and what non-point source pollution is. So a watershed is the geographic area where the precipitation that falls onto that area is going to end up into a single receiving body of water. One of the interesting things about a watershed is it is somewhat like a Russian nesting doll, where it depends on how you define it. You can have a very small watershed, which is a single creek, or a very large watershed, which is the Great Lakes Basin. And then one of the ways that this matters to you is that pollutants that exist on the land in that watershed are going to end up in the receiving bodies of water as water moves through that watershed. And so in the 70s, when environmental regulations were passed to control point sources of pollution coming from factories or other things that you might think of, a discrete conveyance or a pipe just dumping sludge into a river, many of those sources of pollutants have now been remediated, which means that now the main contributor to pollution in bodies of water is non-point source pollution. And that's a little bit more difficult to handle and often ends up at your desk. So stormwater is the water that passes over or through the land, picks up pollutants or not, depending on how clean the area passes through is, and then ends up in a receiving body of water. If not properly managed, it can cause issues with flooding and erosion. And if it passes through a particularly gross area, it can also discharge pollutants into that receiving body of water. This is coming from an EPA webinar, and this is just to show the exact impact of development on on a water system. You can see that the solid line is a normal system in a natural vegetated state. It is a relatively soft peak that happens a little bit further down. Whereas if you have a developed area, which is that dashed line, it is significantly peakier, and it's significantly higher. And so what that sounds like is it is flashier, which means that the same volume of water that falls onto an area can cause a greater strain on existing infrastructure. And that may not necessarily be the case with climate change. So those two things can exacerbate strain on existing infrastructure. So it is both the volume of the runoff and the time at which it reaches particular pieces of infrastructure. And as a general principle, as you increase development, you're increasing the volume of runoff that is reaching these pieces of infrastructure or these tributaries. It is going to increase the rate of runoff, and it is going to generally decrease water quality. I wanted to sort of throw this slide in there just to say that there's some slippage in the language around green stormwater infrastructure or nature-based solutions. Many of these terms have analogous meanings. I am going to try to be using nature-based solutions as my term. That's sort of the new term of art. But as you're having these conversations generally, it is useful to know that these all sort of mean more or less the same thing for your purposes. So nature-based solutions are an approach to land management that works with nature to manage stormwater. And the idea is to detain or retain water and help it to infiltrate at the site where it is. Vegetative processes are going to help capture pollutants, minimize nutrient inputs into those receiving bodies of water, and reduce stormwater impacts. So there are a couple of different policy options that can be taken either by you or by other local units of government. The first one I want to talk about is the Watershed Management Plan, which is a really useful tool, but it's not specifically a policy per se. And then the master plan and local ordinances, both police power and zoning, are going to be implementable. And then nature-based solutions as they stand, any policy that increases the use of these systems is going to be good policy in terms of managing stormwater. So why am I talking about watershed management plans? Before I get into it, are you familiar with what they are? Yes or no?
Yes.
No? Yes. Some yes, some no. It is a very long, somewhat dry document that is about 300 pages long. It is awesome. It is the best document ever. It is created by stakeholders, and what it does is it looks at what exactly is going on in your watershed, what are the existing characteristics, both in terms of history and culture, and also in terms of existing water quality. It then says, well, what are the priorities, both in terms of the science and in terms of the existing and anticipated future use of those systems, and what are our priorities for addressing existing or potential issues? Then we create implementation tasks. These implementation tasks have been prioritized and should, if implemented, improve water quality. They have also been prioritized. And furthermore, those implementation tasks are facilitated by EGLE and the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, which means if you're taking those tasks on, you are very likely to get funding to actually accomplish those tasks. So it's a really useful tool for identifying ways to actually make a change and identifying funding sources to make those projects happen. I have two things that I have pulled out of this plan just to highlight them again as tools for you. One is talking about critical areas, which are locations where actions are needed. They're both reflecting current pollution and anticipated issues. As you'll notice, stormwater has been identified for a number of areas in Emmett County. Moving on. The other thing I wanted to pull out, you don't need to actually read these, but I just wanted to note that these do exist in the Watershed Management Plan. The first are these specific implementation steps, and as you can see, they're by color ranked high, medium, and low priority. And then there's also a table that looks at what are specific implementation techniques or specific management techniques, and what are they going to be effective at treating. So it's not just looking at, oh, well, a rain garden is your one-stop shop for every single problem. There are different technologies, and there's a tool in this watershed management plan for determining what is going to be most useful. Next slide. The next step is, I'm skipping over ordinance language because that is not specifically what I wanted to talk to you about. So I'm skipping to sound stormwater management techniques. First one is a shoreline protection strip, also known as a green belt. This is going to be a really helpful way of ensuring that stormwater that is passing over an area is infiltrated before it enters that receiving body of water. We do have specific recommendations for what goes into those shoreline protection strips. I will be happy to go into more detail if anyone has any more questions. Rain gardens and vegetated swales are useful features for an urban area. You can put them along sidewalks, anywhere that there's moving water. Gray infrastructure like catch basin inserts and oil and grit separators are not necessarily per se green stormwater infrastructure, but they are very useful when tied to those systems to help remove trash before it ends up in that vegetated system to ensure that those plants can actually do their job. Things like green roofs and permeable pavements or pavers are also useful structural elements that can help infiltrate water before it has to enter existing gray infrastructure or any vegetated system. Next. There's also a couple of general principles that I wanted to run through. One is conservation. If you have a vegetated area, it's better to maintain as much of that as possible rather than removing it and planting something new. When you plant something new, especially if you're tilling the soil, you're probably going to have a great deal of erosion and movement of that earth. So anything that you can do, especially to maintain those large trees, great idea. Minimizing the impact of an existing project as much as possible. Thinking about when that project is taking place. So especially if a project is going to have an impact right near a body of water, thinking about fish spawning. If you're doing it in a more wooded area, thinking about the reproductive cycles of the animals that live there or the movement patterns. And the Fish and Wildlife Service would be a good resource for that. Integrated management is another idea that is useful to take into consideration. Again, that table with multiple methods for implementation. Just having a rain garden is good, but if you have a rain garden plus a oil and grit separator plus another technique, that is going to be the most effective to actually address all of the problems that might be in that water. And then finally, the idea of pollution prevention. I come from pesticide world, and that means that I think a lot about how do we reduce the amount of chemicals that we're using in the first place so that we don't have to treat it after the fact. I was not sure to what extent you wanted to talk about Article 20, so I kind of left this blank. I would be happy to chat. I submitted some recommendations to change the language or additions and changes to make to the language. Happy to discuss it. Otherwise, that is what I wanted to talk to you about. I apologize again for missing my 6 o'clock arrival time.
Thank you.
You didn't really keep us very much longer because we were here anyway doing other business, so
that worked out. All right, thank you.
Any questions for me? Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Now we're going to open it up to public comment.
Mike, to be continued. Carla Buckmaster. I just want to preface the last part of what I wanted to say by saying that I have attended city council meetings about this brownfield. I've attended brownfield meetings about this brownfield. And I still have the questions that I put forward to you to begin with. You just get a broad view of what this brownfield is all about. I am not opposed to housing in any way. And I thank Commissioner Kuntz for trying to pin down, I think, about what the rent would be, but I didn't hear any figures. And I know that at one time in something that I've read about this brownfield, they gave figures of what the rent would be. But I can't find it again, and I don't hear it, and I'm assuming none of you know it. I don't know it. Also, I was going to mention that when I looked at the plan, Mr. McClellan stated that there were 7 residential units, and when I looked at it, I counted 6, but I've also seen it reported as 9 in some of their work, but I think it's 6 residential units that are being planned in this brownfield plan. Okay, 6. The 3-story buildings will not include elevators, which one would think would be necessary in a build to satisfy ADA requirements, but no. Evidently, it's not required by law for a 3-story building, so the project will save bucks. They said that it had money consideration. They'll save bucks by not having elevators, so handicap need not apply for some of the apartments. 7, I have not seen a plan on where the removed snow or plowed snow will be placed. 8, Where will the contaminated refuse from the demolition and groundwork be disposed? In Emmett County or where? I'd like to know beginning and end dates for the entire project. I don't think that's out of sight. I think that was part of what happened with the hole.
36.
Much information often has been stated during meetings that is vague. Written and dated documentation should be available for answers to the above concerns, for instance. And I mean it. Written documentation. If they're going to be starting and stopping a certain time, have it written down somewhere. And please get some answers to the other questions. Clerk Canine, please attach my comments into the minutes for this October 19th, 2023 Emmett County Board of Commissioners meeting. And I thank you all for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. Anyone else wishing to speak?
Excuse me, I won't keep you too much longer. Janine Smith, Emmett County, Friendship Centers of Emmett County. I just want to say thank you for taking the action tonight that you took. And I do think that this millage is worth taking a look at in terms of priorities. Right now, we have 30% of those who are 60 and over who live in Emmett County, but 37% are 50 and over. So that means that those folks are going to be turning 60 in the next who knows little how long. And we need to have a plan. We need to have a strategy. It's important. 6 years ago when I came into this position, that's the first thing we did was we developed a strategic plan. And I would really like to see the Board of Commissioners give some direct guidance to the Aging Advisory Committee on what you see as the goals for the future. And lastly, I would like to invite you to come to the centers. If you haven't been there lately, stop in and see us. We would love to give you a tour, show you around our building in Petoskey. We're going to be having a Veterans Day event, although I haven't cleared it with the zoning and planning folks. But our plan is we have little flags that we want to honor veterans with by putting them in our lawn out in front of our building as a display for the community to know that we love our veterans and we support them. So if you have a chance and you're out and about on Friday, November 10th, stop it. We'd love to see you. Thank you.
Are you going to have green lights?
Well, I was thinking about how we could do that. All of our lights are like, we got to have electricians put them in and such. So I'm not sure. We're going to have to figure that out.
Any other public comment? Seeing none, come to the announcements. The next Board of Commissioner meeting will be held on November 6th, 2023 at 6 o'clock at this, in this room, the Board of Commissioners room. Look for a motion to adjourn.
Second.
A motion and a second to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. We're adjourned.